Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens. Before we talk about this episode, can I just ask, if you enjoy this, subscribing really does help. It really helps with our stats, really helps our numbers, and you'll get notified when new episodes come out. And if you're a first-time listener, you are really welcome to join us. Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
What a great chat with Keval Patel.
Brilliant, love it. What I love about is the, you know, just some of the things that he does with his team to motivate the team. Mm. It's just brilliant. I love the Harry Potter reference. See, now that's got those of you thinking, what's that all about? Does he use a wand? But no, he's just a really nice guy who's grown quite quickly, hasn't it? From where it started.
He has, yeah.
And another, out of adversity comes opportunity.
And I also love that he's about positivity, about passion, about inspiring people. But it's also good for business.
Yeah.
So a lot of people go, yeah, but it's all a bit soft and it's all a bit fluffy and doesn't make a difference.
It's a little bit woolly.
It does, because he's building a group of practices. He's got an academy, but based on a really strong culture.
No,
so
it's brilliant.
Shows that there is a real P&L benefit to operating a business in that way.
And what a wife.
Yes.
What an understanding wife. See, now, if that doesn't make you want to listen, I do not know. Well, brilliant.
So, another episode beckons.
Another episode in our Dentology podcast,
yes.
The Business of Dentistry.
Today, we're delighted, absolutely delighted. We've got Dr. Keval Patel joining us. And Keval is a dentist, but also a director, along with his wife, Shrina, of the Karna Health Group and the Karna Dental Academy. Hello, Keval. How are you?
Yeah, hello.
I am brilliant, guys. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Really excited, actually, to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, no, likewise. You've got a great story to tell, so we're looking forward to digging through that. But before we start, congratulations. Sorry.
Cleanly shaved face.
Cleanly shaved, yes. That's right. Yeah, we must comment on how well shaven you are.
just here, right?
Yeah, it's lovely. Yeah, it's brilliant. No, it's lovely, yeah.
But first, I must congratulate you. I wasn't able to get there, but I understand you did an amazing event for your referring dentist recently.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we missed you. Definitely missed you. But it went really, really well, actually. I think they didn't really know what to expect, and I don't think we knew what to expect. And I think the expectation probably was that it was going to be this CPD event with some lecturing and just a quiet little shindig. And they rock up with a paparazzi wall and showgirls and casino tables and lots of different acts and things like that. So I think we shook the Milton Keynes world a little bit.
Yeah,
it was really good fun. Really good fun.
But things like that, they're incredible.
It's
but
fabulous.
Quite often you set the bar so high, don't you? You start and you're like, okay, well, we've done something so incredibly good. Yeah. Where do we go from here?
I reckon we'll probably shock them by just doing a normal CPD event next year.
No, just don't do it for 5 years and they'll get really excited.
Yeah, people will be turning up in wigs and big sunglasses and Elvis outfits, and you'll be sitting there saying, no, guys, you've misjudged this. No. This is all about occlusion, I'm afraid, tonight.
Brilliant. Yeah.
That would be quite funny, actually. That would be quite funny.
Yeah. We've got a lot of dental stuff to get through with your group and your academy and your own personal journey. But before we get to that, what do we need to know about your early years to understand the person you've become? What was your childhood
were
like?
Were you
your
born
upbringing?
To be a dentist?
Yeah.
Early years. So my parents, to be honest, my household was just full of love. It was a really happy household. We didn't have much, but we were never made to feel that way. My parents came over, like with many sort of Indians from East Africa, when they had to come over. And both of my parents, actually, their dads died really early. So they owe a lot to their elder siblings who pioneered coming out here and setting up. And they were big families. My dad had sort of seven other siblings. Mum had three other. I don't think they had TV in those days. So that's probably what happened. So they set up businesses. Dad set up with his brother and then moved over to, I think they started in London, moved over to Northampton, and then set up on his own, Northampton and Milton Keynes. And yeah, I mean, a lot of their ethos was really just to get me and my sister educated. That was what they wanted to do. That was the primary focus. And yeah, so they run into a few sort of financial difficulties during the way. So we had these shops. They had one specific shop where the guys decided that they were going to sell that building to a supermarket. And basically gave them very little, you know, compensation and sort of kicked them out. By that time, my sister started going to sort of secondary education and grammar schools, and she was mm-hmm. okay. And I had 1 year in sort of prep school, and then they had to take me out of there, which I think broke them a little bit because they couldn't afford to keep me in the mm-hmm. in the school. But what they did do was keep me in Saturday school, much to my delight. And I remember
all your friends are out playing football and cricket, and you're back in school.
and I'm in Saturday school. But this is what I mean. This is the ethos was fully, you know, education based, and they wanted to give us the opportunities that we, you know, they didn't have coming over.
And we hear time and time again about the Indian culture of, you know, you can be a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, or a failure. Is this that side of things, or is this born out of their own experience, why they wanted you to be educated so that you could potentially have a better life than they'd had?
Yeah, to be honest, I think they just wanted security. I think they've come through this life, you know, and whatever they had to go through, and not had that security. So they wanted that. They wanted a little bit of the prestige factor, I reckon, as well. But a lot of it was, you know, security for us, and being able to be stable going forward, really.
Yeah. What was it like going from prep school to state school, or do you not remember it?
Yeah, well, so at this Saturday school, the state school was horrible. And it's not because state schools generally are horrible. I think this specific one just really didn't suit me. And there was, you know, got bullied a bit and I really didn't like it. But at this Saturday school, I remember they did a test, you know, sort of sprung a test on us, and the teachers were there. One of them was just sort of looking at this test paper, and they called the other teacher over. And I thought, shit, I'm going to get kicked out of Saturday school. What did they do? And then they called my parents later in the day and said, look, you know, we'd like to offer him a scholarship bursary to come to the school. And this is a school that they wanted me to go to. So I think they were sort of delighted. And this is what I mean. I was saying to you before, I think that there's a lot of luck that happens on the way. And I think this was one of those things. And actually, I ended up going there. And it set up, you know, me sort of preparing to go to secondary school. And ironically, 30 years on, my kids go there as well now. So,
Are any of the teachers still there?
Yes, so there's one. There is one that's still there. And I try and just duck whenever I'm walking past her, just in case she sort of remembers me. But yeah, there is one that's still there.
So a scholar bursary sort of leads me to think that perhaps you were quite a smart kid.
Yeah, I love sport, and I loved, you know, anything that wasn't educational. But I think, yeah, I probably was able to. I sort of just ended up doing the bare minimum to get through, you know, year on year. Even to be honest, through uni and everything else, you know, up until probably my final year, where I realised that if I don't pass, I'm in trouble, really. So that was where I sort of kicked in. And
but you had more gears by the sounds of it. By you were kind of coasting, but you had more in the tank. You could turn the gears up and you could apply more.
Yeah, I didn't realise until later. Yeah, you know, and like I said, it just didn't really appeal to me. I for most of my childhood, I just wanted to be a cricketer, and I was this sort of a opening bowler. But the problem was that everybody kept growing, and I stopped. And so I think I would have been the shortest opening bowler in history if I did rock up there. But yeah, a lot of my childhood was just cricket related, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. Your dental school experience, you say that you kind of were coasting and then you sort of worked hard in your last year. Was it an enjoyable time? Was your cohort good?
Was it partying?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. If my parents are listening to this, then no, I didn't party at all.
Let's assume your parents perhaps aren't listening to this.
To be honest, so I went to Manchester, University of Manchester, and I absolutely loved it. It's probably one of my favourite sort of periods of life. Learned a lot about myself. I had a great group of friends. There's eight of us. We still get together, regularly now. And it was that group, I think, that sort of got me through year on year. There was partying, definitely. Again, we played a lot of sports. So five-a-side football and gradually, I sort of lived next to the Curry Mile. So I gradually ballooned and ended up going from striker to sort of midfield to ended up in goal, as you saw went on. I look back really favorably there. I think we learned a lot. It's a very PBL sort of culture, problem-based learning in Manchester, which is not for everybody. But I think it suited me pretty well because I got to do the studying part, but also have that bit of time as well to do everything else.
Mm.
The guys that you're in touch with, just kind of a broad brush, are they working as associates, practice owners, in dentistry? How have their careers done as a group?
Fully mixed. So one of my good friends, Ravi Nathwani, he owns quite a few practices in sort of the Midlands, Derby area. I've got a couple of other friends who, one's a lecturer now, Nicola Oberoi. He's a lecturer in Manchester. Heavily based on implants. A couple of the guys are associates. A couple of the guys are looking into practice ownership now as well. So really mixed bag.
Yeah, which I think is probably fairly representative of dentistry. That's kind of
people.
What it's like, isn't it? Yeah, you get a mixture where they kind of don't go one way or the other. It's interesting to see whether different dental schools produce people that go on and
different almost ideology.
So you qualified, you an associate for 7 years. During that time, you then did a master's in dental implants, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, I did.
I was going to say, so you obviously enjoyed the clinical side of things to do that, but also obviously had a yearning on the business side as well because you decided to then go and buy your first as what has become many practices. What was your rationale, your thinking?
And when
behind?
Was that?
Yeah, yeah.
When was your first one?
First practice, 2015.
Oh, wow.
We actually went through the process of trying to acquire. Well, I guess a step back, where I was an associate, it was sort of heavy NHS. With a chap called Rescue in Wellingborough, and he's very much my mentor. He was the one that put sort of our ethos into place without knowing it at the time, to be honest. He was heavily based on education for his associates. And so I sort of learned that, and I really wanted to do it on my own. And I think when I sort of met Srina, or when we started dating and we decided we were going to get married, I think it was almost like this natural progression is, well, you're two dentists, go and buy a practice. Didn't know the foggiest about it. and it just seemed like it was the dumb thing to do, I guess it worked out, but it's probably not the way you need to go into things. And so we were getting married 2012. And during that sort of the wedding prep time, we decided to take the leap into practice ownership, found a practice we liked. And put an offer in, and it was a small practice, and we were going to work in there, and that was going to be life, to be honest. And we were going to complete 2 weeks before the wedding day, so everything was happening at the same time, really. And then I won't mention names, but we got a call from somebody who was helping with that, and he was a patient at that practice, and he actually was being told, he went for a checkup and he was told by the owner there, oh, by the way, I'm selling and I'm setting up a little while away. Why don't you come join me there?
Oh.
That's
naughty.
It's naughty, yeah. Yeah. So we didn't know what to do. You know, everything was happening all at the same time. We've gone through all the due diligence process. We've spent everything on it as well. And then we just said, you know, we're not going to do it because what's the point of paying that much goodwill and potentially not having patients there, you know, when you start. So we sort of dropped out of that one. And that was our first ever, you know, looking at practices and anything really. So then it put us off for a while, to be honest. It put us off.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, because you sort of think, oh, well, is this the world of dentistry? Is this what happens? Is this the norm, you know?
Yeah.
And then
when you've no other reference point, it's easy to make that conclusion, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Ironically, I became friends with the guy later. I don't hold grudges, and it's a small world. And actually, our life, you know, it was a key moment. Again, it's one of these luck things that it didn't feel it at the time, but actually going forward... It was probably the best thing that happened. We didn't feel it though, definitely. We looked at a load of practices then in between, and there was a few. I remember there was one that we really wanted to go for, and we ended up not we actually put an offer in, and they went with somebody else because we were too inexperienced. But the good thing I think throughout that whole process is I made really good relationships with the bank. They, you know, it was a small bank and they very much supported us and they believed in us. And then finally, the one that we purchased in 2015, we went there, went to see it, put an offer in, and it was a big practice and it was a lot of goodwill. It was very scary. And they said no. and you know, the whole time I thought, this is it, this is the one. And I was so dejected after it. Went on holiday, and it was probably a few months on, and I just emailed them to say, you know, how's it going? And, you know, I hope everything's going well for you guys and so on. And again, one of these luck things. And they said, well, actually, the other guy is probably pulling out because they can't raise the finance, either finance or commute or something along those lines. So yeah. I got on the phone. I was in, I think, Abu Dhabi at the time. I got on the phone to... The bank guy said, look, I need a letter saying that I'm good for the money. Send it over and I'll forward it over to them. So I did that and they accepted it, and then we started the process, and that went really well. So
but Cable, you know, you say it's lucky. I don't know. I think one, it serves to the value you put on people and relationships. But I don't know many people who would have just sent an email.
Speculative almost.
Yeah. Yeah, speculative punt, which is, I hope it's going well. And you created that opportunity. 99% of people would have just shut that down and moved on to the next one. But you just circling back to it at the right time just created that opportunity for you. And then you jumped on it and you moved quickly. So, yeah, I think it's easy to pass it off as luck. But you did something that most people wouldn't have done.
Yeah, that's kind of you. Yeah, I'll still put it down to luck, Candy. No, but thank you. Yeah, yeah. So, that was the first one. And you know, there were so many years that I was excited to become a principal that I had bought a CBCT even before we owned the practice. So I was ready there to install this. Because my plan was to do implants in and around it and get again. I'd done this master's in implants, so. I'm so excited. I'm sure many of your listeners are as well. You know, they're excited. They've got their own things, their own stances to put on things. So literally day one we took over, I think that week we got it installed. They must have thought, what the hell are these guys doing?
Wow.
but really excitable.
And I'm sure Sheena was delighted it was no longer in the kitchen.
Yeah. Well, luckily they installed it, but it's... we had a really small kitchen at the time as well, Andy. So
it would have filled it.
It would have filled it.
Before we get on to the growth of the group and the other practice you've added on, because it'd be interesting to kind of break that down and work out how that happened. You've actually, a couple of years now, you haven't delivered any clinical dentistry at all, have you? And I'm only interested in that because lots of people that own groups continue to do a bit of clinical dentistry, and they might do a couple of days and then they work on the business. Whereas you've literally, you know, you shut down on the clinical side and you're now devoted to developing the business. What was the logic for that? Why did you kind of go down that route?
Yeah, so I think two things, Andy. I think the first was just before I think 2019, Srina made this application to a NatWest Accelerator program. So it's mainly for startup businesses. And it was a 6-month sort of initial program. I think we were there for a year. And when we were on it, we both saw a whole different side to business. And, you know, you're so often in a dental business, you don't have any knowledge about dental business, firstly, right? you're a dentist, and then you go into the business side of it. It was a whole different energy, really positive people, people that wanted to get their businesses off the ground, and they wanted to know how, and they wanted to know how to market and what people to relate to, and the finances side of it. And actually, we both invested a ton into both. So Srina did an MSc in endo at that time as well. I did my master's in implants. But we both thought, actually, we quite enjoy the business side. And thinking of it now as a business rather than, being a dentist in a practice and trying to earn money and gain patients and experience, it flipped us, to be honest. So that was that. But I think we probably still would do what most others did and have a finger in dentistry, but do the business side up until COVID. So COVID happened, and I've had this eye condition since I was 21. And normally you have a few drops and it settles down and it's fine. Now, I think probably with COVID and the stress and everything else, it really flared up, and to the point where I remember thinking, I can't really see that number plate really clearly, in front of me. But everything was shut, so I couldn't really investigate. I thought my prescription on my glasses had changed, and I just haven't changed the glasses for a while. So I went to the optician, and they said, no, your glasses are fine. There's something going on with your eye. And I thought, okay, maybe this condition. And then I got transferred to Moorfields Hospital. And, I was that guy where they bring all the students to come have a look have a look at this, so
you don't see this much.
I was like, okay, right, do you want to tell me what's going on, or we're just gonna have a
you didn't know until oh, brilliant.
No, so in short, they don't really know. They still don't really know. There's a few different issues that was going on. It gets resolved with I had a whole concoction of it's a cocktail of drops and different things. And then it settled down, but I think it made me think, if I'm going to stop dentistry, I want to do it on my own terms. I don't want to be forced to do it. And again, I think because of COVID and the fact that we could all sort of stop and reflect, we ended up saying, okay, well, actually, why don't I slowly stop doing dentistry and see whether we can do it. And I think, it's a big leap of faith, isn't it? You don't know whether you're going to earn the same income and do whatever you're going to do. And I think that's the point where we thought, well, actually, let's build up the business. Let's think about the business first. Let's build it up. Let's do all these things that we had these aspirations to do, like set up an academy and develop the dentist and everything else. So that was a big turning point.
Wow. And it clearly worked, because you've now got five larger practices. You've got your referral center, you've got a practice with some partners, and you've got your academy. So, perhaps those two significant moments of you deciding due to your eye issue and also the accelerator program with NatWest, you've kind of put those two things together, and you've gone on to create this incredible group. And it's happened pretty quickly as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, the first two practices happened slowly, and like I said, I worked in one, Srina worked in the other, and that was going to be life. and then the next three happened pretty quickly afterwards, and one I think end of 2021, and the last two in the last sort of 6 months.
Wow. Yeah. So a bit more luck, as you'd put it.
Mm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So lots of people look at your situation and be like, okay, so I'm an associate and I'd like to buy a practice, or I have one practice, I'm thinking about getting to my second. What were the significant things, do you think, that happened that took you from having your practice and Srina's practice, everything was going really well, to making this decision to step back, bolting on more practices, creating your academy, now offering a diploma? What were the kind of the big lumpy things that happened on that journey for it to work?
I'd love to give you an answer, you know, a really profound answer to that. But I feel like there's loads of small things that happen. I had this plan and it was on my wall.
I've had this vision.
It was a case of, you know, we had the two practices. Like I said, we wanted to, it was that point where we started the kind of health group, you know, and actually we wanted an identity to it all, you know, and we had all these aspirations to you know, have positivity, have collectiveness, all these things, but we couldn't really do it with just the two practices. We couldn't get a brand awareness out. We couldn't get our names out there, you know, all these little things that really, you know, I'm very much the dreamer out of us two. And, you know, I think I told you when we met Andy, I'd be broke if it wasn't for Shrina. She gets everything in order.
Keeps
me anchored. And I had all these aspirations, you know, I wanted to do all these things. And she was like, well, can we do it? Okay. I mean, we would look at cash flows for every practice going forward. And what do we need to do to make that practice work? What do we need? What happens if things go bad? What happens if interest rates goes up, you know, and all these sort of things. And then we looked at quite a few different practices over that time. And then we thought, well, and we'd look at it and say, okay, well, can we make this work? You know, and with the loan and with everything else that we need to do. And then we gradually just sort of bolted on. The partnership practice was one of my associates, Roshwin. He really wanted, him and his wife, both dentists, they've been wanting to sort of have their own practice in the UK for a while now. But he always said to me, look, if we do, then if I find one, you know, I'd really like to do it with you guys. And I think our growth will be in two ways. It will either be finding, you know, good associate-led practices that we can put our sort of spin onto things, or it'll be with partners that want to develop the clinical side, and then we'll do the back office side, you know, and go from there. So we're piloting that partnership practice, going really well. It's a series of these little events.
That's the truth of success, isn't it? You know, is that thing about, you know, it takes you 20 years to be an overnight success. It's often those small bits that just come together nicely. But it's also interesting what you were saying about having, from the early days, having a supportive bank. Yeah, having a bank that understood you, worked with you and helped you. Because I think that's where lots of people, particularly at the moment, are concerned around finance. But it's nice to hear that the banks are out there and they're still supporting dentistry.
Yeah, and I think, so we ended up, we blew all their sort of loaning criteria out of the water. So every time we had a practice, we were already past what they'd normally lend to dentists. and they would have to approach their board and they'd say, all right, it's Gable and Shrina and this is what they're out. And we had really robust business plans though. And I think that's what initially sort of, you know, made them realize that, okay, these guys aren't just taking a punt. They've thought about all the aspects. And then now it's more relationships, you know, they know us and, you know, we bank with different banks, you know, now, but a lot of it is relation. And I think when you're first getting into it, you just sort of think a bank is a bank and there's set criteria and you have to deal with it. But actually, bank is also about relationships and finance is also about relationships. And actually, if they can see what your vision is and what you're trying to do and just get your energy, your enthusiasm, it goes a long way.
It does, yeah, definitely.
I think you're right. I think you have banks, but more importantly, the banks, you have managers that work in banks, and it's the manager who you're ultimately going to be impressing and influencing, and they need to get behind what you're doing. So if you can find those people, it's interesting you mentioned about kind of, you know, your passion. And, you know, I know that within your group, progression and positivity sit at the heart of your business. And obviously that feeds into having a really positive culture. What does that look like in the business on a day-to-day basis? What does it feel like being part of Kana?
I think you probably need to ask the associates and the team, really. But I think from our part, you know, one of the biggest things initially, and even before, even when we had the two practices, we wanted just the dentists and the team to develop. So everything was in London or Manchester, and they'd have to travel to all these places. And actually, opposite one of the practices, that we had. That practice utilized every nook and cranny. So we had no space for meetings or anything like that. And just opposite, there was a sort of an abandoned loft space in a building. I went to go see him. I said, actually, this will be a really good venue to have meetings and have lectures and so on. It was it had like salmon colored faded walls and old sofas in there, and these poles, which I did want to keep, a Srina veto, but these poles in the middle. And so we had to clear the whole space, and we renovated it. And it was a nice large space to have, you know, a sort of, you know, U-shaped table and develop it. So we used to have loads of lectures for our own dentists. And that sort of, you know, that culture started to develop. Mm-hmm. So that development part was massive for us. And like I said, this was where, you know, where I was an associate, I learned that way as well. Mm. And it sort of led to the academy. But the positivity part, that's been harder, because when you take over new, you know, existing practices, they already have a culture.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we made loads of mistakes in the first practice, because we had a number of dentists, great people. But they were towards the end of their dental career. And then there's us, me buying a CPCT before we moved in, and all these, you know, all these aspirations. They don't want to do that. They don't want to be a part of that. They just want to come in, do the job and leave. Mm. And it used to be really disheartening, you know, to have that energy and not have people to follow it. But I think gradually as we hired the people that we hired, we were like, okay, you know, this is what we want to do. And there's loads of jobs out there. You know, you can join whoever, but actually if you want to progress your dentistry, you might be with us 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But you'll be a better dentist by the time you leave, you know, so.
Teams quite often, they work in tribes, don't they? You know, you end up with a group of, in a dental practice, you might have 8, 10, 12 people, whatever it might be. So when you buy a practice, there's obviously a tribe already established. And then over time, you might introduce new people to that tribe. Do the old team, the team that were there from the beginning, do they tend to gravitate towards the new team and the new tribe? Or do they find themselves kind of just not fitting with that culture? Because it is a bit fresh, it is a bit different. And if you've been in a practice for perhaps 15 or 20 years and you're used to a particular way of working,
to change it is tricky.
It could be quite challenging for some people.
Yeah, I think you have both, Andy. I think, you know, some people are really excited about, you know, that practice might have been that way for 20 years, 30 years, and actually they just wanted that injection of energy. Mm. And so they're there and they're on board and they want to be a part of it. And some people just like, you know, it was going fine the way it was. Why do we have to change it?
And
I think that's what we learned along the way. You know, initially we used to sort of pitter-patter around people and, you know, try and have little bits of our culture here and there, and it wouldn't work because you can't have half a culture. No. You know, you have to
either in or you're not. Back. Yeah.
You're in or you're not.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, and again, it's hard for people that have been there for a long way and then suddenly you're implementing different things and they then have to decide whether they're on board or they're not.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make them bad people.
No,
it
not at all.
Make them bad people, but they're just not aligned. And now we have a different philosophy and it's, you know, this is what we're about. You've seen what we've done in some of the other practices. So, you know, you're either, you know, do you want to be with us? Or, you know, do you need to find somewhere else? And we're quick with that now. You know, we didn't used to be, but now to build that positivity and culture, you need people on board, and then you need to do cool stuff. So we have different initiatives. So we've got something called the Kana Cup, and the area manager will rock up at the start of the year with a Harry Potter sorting hat. And then she'll put the people in the practices in different houses, and they've decided the names on these houses. So they're very innovative, these guys. So one of the names is like philosophers, you know, like floss ifers.
Right.
One was
like being at school.
And basically, it's not a KPI driven situation. It's literally you get points for positivity. So you might help out a team member or stay late to help somebody out, or you have a really good patient experience and they write a Google review about it, these sort of things. And then Jesse, our marketing manager, will rock up with a prize wheel at the end of a quarter. And yeah, it's small prizes. It might be an adventure golf trip or a little hampers, you know, something along those lines. They spin, the captain spins a wheel and they'll get these prizes. And then at the end of the year, we'll have the, you know, like a Hogwarts style kind of cup, which the winning house will get. But it's worked. It works really, really well for the people that are involved and want to be there. And again, some of the newer practices are like, what the hell is this about?
But it is. It's different.
It's a little bit different. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
We want to do little things like that.
Yeah, and has your academy helped as well in terms of bringing people together? I mean, when we met, you showed me your training suite, which is fab. But I imagine that the academy's helped in terms of bringing more people together, perhaps across different practices, because that's a great way to build culture and, you know, share common messages across the business.
Break down barriers.
Yeah, exactly. But did that academy start as an internal project to help grow and develop the people within the Kana Dental Group? Because you actually now do diplomas externally as well, don't you? Other dentists all across the country can come and learn with Kana.
Yeah. So initially, we didn't have the academy. We just had lectures for our own dentists. And then actually local dentists around the area used to message me and said, you know, can I sort of pop into it? I've seen what you're doing. And next time you're having a course, can we come? And then from there, I thought, well, actually, we've got the facility. You know, we've got that ability to do it. So I looked into creating a diploma and we went through it and we did it. And then the next thing was getting a group of speakers who could, you know, to be honest, nobody's heard of Kana Academy and Kana Dental Group and Kana Health Group at that point. So they had to have a big leap of faith to go come to Sunny Milton Keynes to you know, be part of a diploma program. And I got an amazing lineup that come there. And so, yeah, year one was a lot of our own dentists and then a few local dentists. And to be honest, the USP was, don't go to, you know, London or Manchester. We've got a big middle part of the country. You know, you don't need to travel. Come here. And then the next year we have people inquiring from Ireland and Lincoln and all over the place. And that sort of blew my USP out of the water because it wasn't really local. I think because the lineup's so good, people wanted to come and be a part of it. And so the year after, I don't think there's any of our own dentists, and we do separate things for our own dentists, but it's actually all external delegates. It was a bit of a change, really. And it definitely brings those guys together. And we have big social events and these sort of things around it. But for our own dentists, we have lectures that happen, and then afterwards we'll have a social. Last time we had a go-karting trip after, then it gets the different dentists from different groups together.
Brilliant.
And then I put options of, you know, where else do you guys want to do? And I really wanted to do Laser Quest. It was like my childhood was Laser Quest and these sort of things. So I put Laser Quest or bowling or dinner and drinks, and they all bloody choose dinner and drinks. I'm like, what? You know, I was really upset.
Straight on the phone, we have to cancel the booking.
Yeah, no
cancel
one else. Yeah.
It's just me.
So we do that for our own dentist separate to the academy to get them together. We have a million WhatsApp groups, and the only rule is don't be a dick. You know, help each other out and support each other.
Yeah.
It's funny that thing you say about don't be a dick. A guy called James Kerr has written a book called Legacy about the All Blacks. And one of the things to be an All Black is don't be a dickhead. And it's funny. It's a very hard thing to actually describe what we mean, but we all know one. If someone's being a dick, you know what they're like. And I mean, I know we both are United fans, so we'll gloss over that very quickly, given how things are going at the moment. But you're United fan.
No, let's focus on no.
you're a big cricket fan, and that kind of link back to rugby. You've obviously done the Kana Cup, there's a kind of a sports element to that. Have you incorporated any other kind of, you know, sporting behaviours into the group?
We had the Kana Olympics recently. And, you know, we do a lot of these events, which might be socials in the evenings and these sort of things. But we thought we'd try something different. And I think actually. It was the most well-received day that we've done. And it was wow. really simple. It was hire a field. We had, you know, cones. We had egg and spoon races.
Egg and spoon. We had a sack race.
Yeah, we had a sack race.
There you go. Race.
Yeah, yeah. And so I conveniently decided I was going to be the MC for the day rather than partake.
Participate. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I found a new sort of role for myself there. Yeah. But, you know, like that was, out of all the events, that was the one that got everybody together. And again, some of these points go towards the Kana Cup. But yeah. the rest of it is just having fun with one yeah. another. Mm. We were lucky with the weather. We had a street food band there with some kebabs and these sort of things around it. And they just enjoyed it. It was for 2-3 hours, I think, maximum. Mm. But it was just good fun. So I think that was something that I think we'll do year on year you know, get more and more people involved.
But also, I don't doubt that all this that we've been talking about, we talked a lot about, you know, positivity, culture, creating the right environment, it actually filters through to the bottom line. It's good for business.
Yeah.
And it
has to be genuine. Yeah. It has to be authentic.
Well, I was going to say it's authentic, but it does hit the bottom line, because I imagine your retention of your team is very high. I imagine when you need new team members, existing team members are mentioning it to friends or family or people they know. So creating an environment where people want to be around means you get a motivated but a well-retained team, and that has to flow through to patient care. Patients get to see the same dentist, the same team members time and time again. So it's a really smart business strategy to create an environment where people are enjoying themselves and want to stay, because I genuinely, and you know, I would imagine you do have a very high retention rate of team members.
Yeah, I think we go through the cycles, to be honest. So I think, you know, again, whenever you take over a practice, you'll have that period where, you know, and we have it, you know, where I, again, they're on board or they're not. So we have to go through that cycle, you know. But I think when you're through that cycle, and some of the cycles happen at different times. So one of them's happened recently for a practice that we've had for a number of years. But we realize that we're like, okay, well, this is the perfect time to get that culture that we want there. You know, like I feel like these are the times where there's opportunities. And you know, there's always these places where, oh, well, we could do this, we could do that. Well, actually, a whole new team, a whole new base, let's smash it now and let's get that culture there, because then our life is a lot easier. We get the you know, then you're being truthful to what the values are. Because sometimes you feel, well, actually, if that practice isn't quite the kind of health group values, I'm a bit false when I'm talking about it. But actually, this is what I want. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, we're not 100% there by any means, you know. We're probably about 50% there. But I think if that's what our goals are, we'll get there. Do you know what I mean? We all just have to be on that same path.
Yeah. You're always a work in progress, I think, aren't you?
Yeah. I love the fact that you're so passionate about your business and your team and the direction you're going in. Like I say, I imagine it's an incredibly inspiring place to be. And like I say, it's always work in progress, but you have very clear ideas of what you want your practice to be and, you know, how you want your team to behave. And that's getting reinforced through your academy. I think it's great as a model. Yeah. As a model, I think it's really fabulous.
Yeah, but again, Andy, I think a lot of it is the team. You know, the senior managers that we have the same values, you know. And then, because there's only so much me and Shreena can do, you know, and there's only so much that we can be around at the practices. So each of the senior managers and the practice managers in the places have to have that same belief. And if they don't, you sort of see it, because it's not happening through the practices. So I think you're only as good as the team, you know, and hopefully the senior manager learn from us guys as well. And we're leading in the right way, but they have to follow suit for sure.
Yeah. But the reality is you get to a certain size where you can't, at a micro level, influence all those people. So if you don't have another tier of people below you that live by those values, it will unravel. Yeah. And then you're then, what you said, you know, it's not particularly congruent when you're going out saying this is what we stand for and people looking at it and going, well, that doesn't happen here. it needs to kind of happen everywhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Our body is made up of many parts.
Yeah. Is Shreena still clinical, or does Shreena work with you purely on the business?
Yeah, so she stopped at a similar time, a little bit before me, actually. Again, mainly based on that, the sort of business side of it. To be honest, I'm the luckiest guy. She allows me to do all these crazy things. You know, she knows I'm the dreamer. She knows I'm probably the visionary of the place. So she sets up everything so that I can do it. She might see that I'm a bit tired, or, you know, I'm not being creative, so she'll send me away. You know, she's like, just get out, go clear your head for a couple of days, come back, and then we crack on again. Or and she just does everything, you know, operationally within the businesses and all the things I don't want to do. Compliance, I hate it. She'll get involved with it. And she's sort of along with our head of operations and the other team members. But
yeah,
you know, I think brilliant. You know, she's literally the backbone of the business. Mm. So, yeah,
do you miss clinical dentistry at all?
When I'm at the academy, yeah. When I'm at the academy, you know, and I'm seeing these things, and then we've got pig's head courses, and yeah. You know, especially the surgery side of things. Mm. I really miss it at that point. And I miss the identity. Especially at family barbecues, I don't know what the hell to call myself, right? So,
keep it simple. I'm still a dentist.
Well, before I used to have a consultation area at these barbecues, and I'll have a line of people that are coming to see me. But now it's like, well, sorry, I've not touched a tooth in 2 years, so I don't think you'd like to trust me with the clinical side. But that was hard, to be honest.
You're a dentrepreneur. That's what you're, a dentrepreneur.
Yeah, okay.
But I think that identity thing, you're right. I think when you can describe yourself very easily in one word, everybody knows what a dentist is. So when you say, I'm a dentist, Caroline, my wife, had a situation at the weekend when somebody asked her what I did. And it takes her 2 or 3 minutes to rattle through it, because we do lots of different things. And it's not a career that you can describe in one or two words. So I get what you're saying, that if you say I'm a dentist, you know, everybody across the globe, across the planet, in this country would know exactly what a dentist is. And you are still a dentist, but you're actually building a group of businesses that work within dentistry.
It is hard to describe. And then the initial thing, so you're retired. Definitely not retired, you know.
Definitely not far retired, from it. You got lots more to do.
Working more now than ever before. Yeah. So I think that was the hardest part, was identity part. And I was really just accepting referrals, so I didn't have a very regular patient base of seeing patients every 3 months.
Were you
months,
doing pretty much just implants towards the end?
Implant, sedation, Invisalign. Right. Yeah. I'd see them for the implant journey, and then they'd often be gone. So I didn't have that same, whereas if you speak to Shreena, she really misses, you know, the regular patients that she was seeing and just those conversations about family and dog and cat and everything else, you know, like that side of it. So I think there's different elements that probably people miss during that point. For me, it was very much the stage you said.
It's fascinating, Cobra, and I think we've caught you at a really good time. Because I think you've had your dental career, you're building your group, you've got your academy, and it's going to look so different in 10 years' time. It's going to be unrecognizable from where we are now. But I think to capture it now and then to have a conversation again at some point in the future would be just brilliant. We always wrap up in the same way with our guests. We've got two questions for you. And the first one is, if you could be a fly on the wall in a situation, when would that be and who'd be there?
Yeah, so... I did think about this, and I really wanted something really special as an answer. But you know, the honest truth is, so I've got 3 kids, two boys who are frigging animals, and they're so disorganized. You know, in the morning they'll come down, they'll forget their trousers, they'll forget a tie, they'll forget their homework. And Shreena normally does a drop off, so she's coming back in the house to quickly pick up their homework or a water bottle and these sort of things. And just last week, we had, it's not a parents evening, but it's like at the start of the year, they tell you how they're settling it. And the teachers are like, you know, they're so organized. And, you know, they're prepared for every lesson afterwards. And, you know, all these things are on time. So I think the fly on the wall actually is, I want to see what the hell they're doing at school. And I want to figure out how can we replicate that at home and make them disorganized.
It's working. Working, whatever it is.
So that's the honest truth. I want to see what they're like.
No, fair enough. And if you could meet somebody, if you could sit down and have a beer, a glass of wine, a cup of coffee for an hour, who would you like to meet, given the opportunity?
So there's a chap called Mo, I think you say his name, Gaudet.
Oh, yes, the Google X guy. Yeah.
And every time I listen to one of his podcasts, it's, you know, I find it's almost inspirational, you know, and I can listen to him literally all day talking about different topics. But the main topic is happiness, you know, and I think, you know, I'm probably a victim of all, you know, a lot of imposter syndrome situations and, you know, and actually always striving for the next level and never being content with where you are. And, you always want the next thing and you're never enjoying that. And actually he lost his son, his son was 21 years old, from five sort of preventable mistakes during a routine operation. And the way he sort of overcome it, and he's found this algorithm for happiness. And I think I like it because it's the fluffy stuff, but it's also, there's a bit of theory and maths and, you know, all these, he's got this equation for happiness and how to do it and how to be happy. And it all together comes down to what your expectations are, you know, and what your perception of what things should be are as well. And I think I'd just love to spend a few hours with him, probably him talking to other people and just listening to that and picking his brains with it. And, you know, I think if all of us can come to that conclusion where we're just happy where we are, you know, everything's comfortable, you're happy. And so I think that should be realistically everybody's aim in life, which is easier said than done, isn't it? But
I think it's really cool. Yeah. I think you're right. I think we very, very often we don't appreciate the 95% we've got. We spend all our time looking for the 5% that we'd like. And in reality, the stuff that we've got is amazing. But we always look around the corner or look at somebody else's life or somebody else's house or car or holiday or whatever it might be and go, oh, that's the next thing that I want, without dwelling in the moment and really appreciating how good it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, great point to finish on, Cavo. That was wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for
today.
Your time.
Really,
brilliant.
Really enjoyable. And honestly, I think the trajectory you're on, I think it's truly, truly marvellous. I think it's bringing something quite fresh to dentistry, which is exciting.
I really appreciate you guys having me and thank you as well. And well done to you guys for what you're doing. FTA taking over the world.
In our own small way,
only small part of the world. Yeah.
But actually, you know, for our part, dentistry really is important. You know, it's important to us as a business, but to society, dentistry is important.
Definitely.
And you know, we talk about dentistry being an ecosystem, and you know what you do, what we do, what loads of other people do. We are all connected and interconnected, and it's a great profession to be part of.
Yeah. Well, I always say I wasn't that great clinically, but what I'm good at is being the middleman, and I think connecting people. And you guys are amazing at that. You connect so many different people. I mean, from the podcast, but also Andy. You know, I've met you at so many events. I've only really spoken to you at the last one we were together. And you know, there's crowds of people around you, and you know everybody, you know what they're doing, you're connecting other people, and actually, you know, if we do that little bit, all of us do that little bit, just to connect one another. You know, I think
we all do better as a result of it, don't we? We, you know, it's like I say, it's not a selfless thing. It's we all do better. The more people we know, and the more we can join those dots, the better we all do from it.
What's that phrase? No man is an island.
Yeah.
Great phrase. Yeah.
Lovely, Cable. We'll let you carry on with your day. Thank you very much indeed. And hopefully see you soon at an event or something down the line.
Carrying the car.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Keep well. Cheers, Cable.
Thanks very much.
Dada. Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.